Welcome, everybody. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and this is the Right Now Mastermind class for March 2015. Our class is called What's Standing Between You and Finishing Your Book? Three Writing Obstacles and How to Overcome Them. So today we're going to talk about obstacles and how to overcome them. Henry Ford said, obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off your goal. I love that saying. I've used it on my website many times. And yet the saying kind of frustrates me because it seems like obstacles are just a part of life. As a writer and a coach, I've seen a lot of clients confront real obstacles. It's pretty common in the course of writing a book to deal with problems. And not just kind of that kind of psychological thing that people make fun of, but I wouldn't because it's real. You know, we've got this psychological writer's block thing that a lot of us experience, and that's pretty normal, and a lot of people make fun of it. But I think just like in any job, writing a book has problems and obstacles that we encounter, things that get in the way of our writing, and we need to figure out how to overcome them. So the good thing about obstacles is this. If you can figure out what it is that's getting in your way, you can usually figure out a way to jump over them, get around them, get rid of the obstacle. So as I said about writer's block in the fall, I like to think about obstacles as problems to solve, as opposed to thinking of them as something, you know, like an affliction. You know, like I think we talk about writer's block like I've got asthma, or I've got writer's block. It's, you know, it's just something I have to live with. And I like to think of writer's block and obstacles as just part of what happens as a writer. So today I'm going to talk about three of the most common types of obstacles my clients face. So these are three categories of obstacles, and there are different kinds that exist within each of them. So I'll talk about the three common types. And for each of the obstacles, I want to give you some examples of what each look like, since they're all categories as opposed to individual obstacles. And then for each category, I want to talk about how I work with clients to overcome the obstacles. And at the very end, we're going to talk about how you can examine your own life for writing obstacles and figure out how to overcome them. And then at the very end of the call, we'll have some time to talk about obstacles and to ask questions. So, you know, before we even begin to talk about the three types of obstacles, just think about, think about for a minute the obstacles that you face as a writer. Maybe think about the last time you had trouble writing, the last time you had a writing session that didn't go well, or the last time you worked on a project that was challenging and that you experienced a real significant, problem. And just write that down and write down some of the things that made it an obstacle or that characterized this obstacle. And that will give you something to kind of think about as we go through this so that you can better relate. And I'm going to ask you to do some things later to help you think about solving your obstacle. So obstacle category one is what I call end game obsession. When we think or obsess about the end product at the beginning or middle of the process. So in idiom form, this would be putting the cart before the horse. And this is a tricky one. I thought a lot about this before I decided to use it as one of my categories. And it's tricky because of this. When I talk about goal setting, and you've probably even seen this in my newsletter, when I talk about goal setting, I often quote Stephen Covey's famous saying, begin with the end in mind. And as a coach, I found that goal setting, that thinking about what we want to accomplish, that really visioning our future life, is an essential part of the writing life. That if we can do that visioning piece, if we can know where we're going, we are going to use our time much better. So if we know we want to be a novelist, we're definitely going to make time to write our novel. Or if we know we want to become a leader in our field, we're going to carve out time for writing our book. We're not going to just spend all of our time working or serving clients. We're going to take time to put those ideas into some sort of a container to share with others. So I feel like that kind of thinking about the end game is really important, but sometimes it can be an obstacle. And the obstacle I'm talking about is not beginning with a goal in mind, because that's good. The obstacle is letting the goal, the end of the process, the outcome, the product, overwhelm or interrupt the process, as in the examples I'm about to share with you. So in these examples, this is when not when you just have a goal, but your goal becomes kind of the whole focus of everything. So what it looks like. It looks like starting to write a book or two and then flipping from idea to idea, project to project, trying to figure out which book is going to sell the best, which book is going to help you make the most money, which book is going to attract the clients. And so you never actually get to the work itself. You're just kind of worrying about which is going to do the best in the market. Another thing this looks like is obsessing about the quality of your writing during the draft stage. So you can't quite, even get your book written because as you're writing, you're thinking, well, this isn't good enough. The voice is wrong. I don't have what it takes. I don't like this. I don't like the way this person is talking. I don't like the voice. I don't like blah, blah, blah. So, and I know that some of you have been there. You're trying to write and yet you're kind of so obsessed by how it's going to sound at the end, and you're comparing yourself to the finished writing of other authors. So you're thinking, you know, my draft doesn't look anything like book 7 of Harry Potter. Well, of course it doesn't, because that's been through many editing rounds. A third way this looks like in writer's life is a writer who workshops and revises the beginning of their novel or their book over and over again so that they'll have something to show agents and editors at conferences, but then never finishing the actual draft. So just kind of staying and reworking and workshopping that first part so that they're ready for the end game, but they never finish the whole book. Another way this takes form is obsessive worrying or obsessive working around placing or selling a piece before it's done. So as you're working on the piece, you're thinking, well, who's going to buy it? The market sucks right now. No agent or editor will ever want to look at this. And sometimes the obsessive worrying just interrupts the writing process, and sometimes the obsessive worrying means we're spending a lot of time online looking for the agent or going to conferences, talking to agents, and trying to sell something that doesn't even exist. And then a final way this takes shape is spending time working on marketing a piece that isn't done. So as you can see, this whole thing, what I call the end game obsession, is really about putting the cart before the horse. It's really about thinking, worrying, working on those end things before we're at that place, before we've even gotten to that place in the process. This is very common, and I think it's especially common in this real social media age where writers are told, you know, you have to have a platform before you can sell your book. So we're spending so much time developing our platform and talking to people and getting our website together and all that stuff that we don't even have anything to sell yet, but we're working so hard with the platform. So here are some tools for overcoming the obstacle. First of all, schedule time to work on what you're worried about. So schedule time that's separate from your writing time. So if you worry about placing your book with a publisher or agent, schedule a few hours a week to start searching for the right agent or publisher. If you're worried about building a platform, then schedule a few hours a week to work on your platform. And then when you find yourself distracted during the writing time, you can say to yourself, okay, don't worry. Don't even think about that now. This is time to work on the process because I've scheduled time for that step later in the week or next week or at the end of the month. So you know you have time to work on the end game, and so you don't have to worry about it while you're actually doing your book writing. A second tool that I think is helpful for this is really thinking about focusing on the process versus worrying about the product. Think about what you're doing as telling a story or sharing an idea or giving information to a group of people. And remind yourself that you don't have to get it perfect at this point. You just kind of have to get it out. You don't need to think about selling it. You don't need to think about making it pretty. You just need to tell the most compelling story possible. You just need to kind of share the details of what's happening. And then once you've got the stuff together, you've got stuff that you can work on selling. A third tool that I think is helpful for overcoming obstacles is really thinking about what's fun or delicious in the process. I think we're a really product-oriented society, and people get a lot of kudos and kudos and celebration for getting something published, for finishing something, you know, for becoming a winner, for winning an award, for all the things that happen at the end. And not many people kind of pat you on the back and say, oh, good, you did your writing today, or oh, good, you slogged through that horrible scene, or, you know, you figured out how to do your fight scene. You're not going to get a lot of kudos for that. So you have to create your own celebration. You have to create your own deliciousness. So I encourage clients to look at what's fun or delicious in the process. So think about, what do you love about the writing process? And dwell on that. Think of your writing time as playtime instead of work time. Whenever you find yourself worrying or obsessing about the end product, look at what's delicious in writing the book here and now. And for many writers, you know, it's the here and now, the writing the book, that's really the fun part, not the going on tour, not all of that. For other writers, they love the like getting in front of people, and they hate the slogging through the work. So for those of you who really struggle with this end game obsession, with really like, how am I going to get out there? How am I going to sell it? What is it going to look like? Who's going to buy it? I want you to think about three things. Schedule time to work on the end game. Focus on the process rather than the product, and then find what's delicious in the process. You know, an example would be, I've worked with many clients who have trouble moving forward and finishing their first draft because they are so obsessive about revising. They cannot stand to move on from a scene until it's perfect. So they obsessively revise the lines of their book before they go on to write the next scene. So one of the tools I've used with them and that I think works really well is the old timer. So we create time limits for revising. And so if they set aside an hour a day to write, then they might give themselves 15 minutes at the beginning of the session to revise. And when that timer goes off, then they have to move forward and write. They're not allowed to go back and revise anymore. So little tricks like that can help you get out of that end game obsession. The second obstacle I want to talk about, I call the knowledge gap. And this is when a writer gets stuck on how to execute a project and cannot move forward. And I think, you know, as an obstacle, this is a pretty big one. Writing is craft. So there's a lot to know when it comes to writing. Yes, you can just, you know, sit down, pour your heart out. But if you're writing a book that you want other people to read, there is craft involved. There are things that you can do to make it the most interesting, exceptional book possible. I went to hear Eric Larson speak last night. He has a new book out on the sinking of the Lusitania. And he's, you know, he's written books like Devil in the White City, and he talks about really wanting to give the reader the very best experience of living in history possible. And so giving a reader experience of living during this time in history. And so for Devil in the White City, it was living during the time of the Chicago's World Fair and what it was like leading up to that and creating it. And so as I listened to him, I realized there's an incredible amount of craft that goes into what he does, and he really had to learn how to do this. And so for all of us who write, there's a lot of craft that we need to learn and be able to use in our writing without it kind of being clunky and showing. So I want to talk about three, four ways that I see the knowledge gap becoming an obstacle for writers. And I'm sure you have your own. These are just some examples. One example is a nonfiction writer who's not sure what they want to do with their ideas. They're kind of stuck on format. They don't know if they want it to be a book, an ebook, a program, a talk, a webinar, a series of talks, what's going to make them the right amount of money, what's going to attract their client base. You know, it's kind of can be really like frustrating because they're not sure what's going to work best based on who their clients are and what kind of information they have to share. A similar issue is a nonfiction writer who doesn't have a structure for their book. And I talk about this a lot because this has been a big issue for me. They don't know how to best present their ideas. Should it be an essay book or a process book? Should I put it in footnotes or should I include some of this information in the text? Do I want a big bibliography or do I just want to kind of write it like a story? So they get to the desk and they stare at their notes and their piles of books and all these ideas and they're like, I have no idea where to start. And another way the knowledge gap takes shape is for novelists. So the novelist gets into the story and they're not sure whose head they want to be in. Or maybe they know that they want to be in the head of the protagonist, but they don't know if they want it to be in first person or in third person. So they don't know if they want to say, well, I did this or Rose did this. And they don't know, maybe do they want to be omniscient and be in a couple of different heads, or limited omniscient and be in, you know, two heads, or omniscient and be in everybody's head. So that can be a very complicated thing. And then once they make the decision about voice and point of view, then it can be a challenge to figure out how to show how a character finds out about things, especially if it's in a first person. How does this person find out about this? Is it just that they happen to be in the room where everything exciting happens? So that can be a big block. And another place I see the knowledge gap, and this is a big one, is the writer who is able to finish a draft but doesn't know where to begin when revising. I see a lot of writing conferences on, you know, how to write a first draft, how to get your magic out, but there's not a lot of conferences or topics or classes on how to revise. So that can be a big gap for writers. They don't know how to take their rough material and kind of shape it into a book. So I meet with clients all the time who get stuck by the knowledge gap obstacle. They tell me that they spent months or sometimes years trying to figure out how to move forward. They've tried a lot of options, but nothing has really felt right. And what they want is a sense of mastery. You know, they really want to know where they're going before they move forward. They want to know that they have the right point of view before they spend time writing a whole book, or they want to know that they have the right structure before spending time working on a whole project. So here are some tools for overcoming the obstacle of the knowledge gap. And you probably can already guess what these are. The first one is just to do what you can to learn craft. So, you know, Writer's Digest books and other publishers create tons of resources for you. So read books on craft. Attend conferences. Attend conferences or workshops that are specifically dealing with your issue. I know that in Wisconsin there's a writer who does a revision workshop, and you know, you have to have a finished novel and you have to send it in to her, and then you can be in this class. So look for conferences or workshops that fit with you. Take online classes. There's lots of opportunities online. Watch YouTube videos. I have a client who is a writer but has is not able to actually read or write. He does all of his writing by talking into a device, and then he gets that transcribed. And so when he needs to learn about craft, he goes to YouTube and looks at videos that people put up on how to do something, how to structure your novel, how to do this kind of a voice. Read blog posts. Many other people have come across these craft problems, and they're kind enough to write about them. So find out what they have to say about what they did. Another thing you can do is read more books. And here I'm not talking about craft books. I'm talking about books that are like the books you're going to read. When I get stuck on voice, structure, character, and other writing problems, I tend to read. And as many of you know, I'm working on a novel and for kids, and I'm starting a mystery novel. And I get stuck a lot. Even though I read a lot, I haven't
written a ton of novel-length fiction. And so it's really helpful for me to go, to have a bunch of books like mine, to look at them and see, well, how did this writer structure it? How did this writer deal with voice? How did this writer deal with the revealing of clues? And you can kind of, you can get a lot of information from reading someone else's book. And when I work with nonfiction books, I really spend a lot of time looking at, you know, how did this writer structure this book? Or how, you know, I might look at multiple books and find out how they're structured to give me some information for myself or for my clients. Another thing you can do is consult with someone. So this is why having a critique group can be super helpful. You know, you can bring your questions about your chapter or your book to your critique group and have them look at it. You can ask a colleague, another writer, or you can hire someone like me, a teacher or a coach or an author, to look at your book and give you a second opinion. Sometimes you just need a fresh set of eyes to figure out how to deal with the book's problem. So if you get a second or third opinion from your critique group, or you hire a book doctor, or you even, you know, get a few friends together over some iced tea or a bottle of wine, and you talk through the problem. As I said above or before, I face this problem many, many times. Structure has always been something that's really important for me as a writer, and as I've primarily written nonfiction books, I've really had to think about book structure. And before I wrote Write-A-Thon, I spent years trying to organize all this information and data I had on how to write a book. And I'd almost given up on the book idea. I kind of was moved on to other book ideas. I was sending around other book proposals when suddenly this idea of writing it as a write-a-thon, like a running marathon, came to me. And once I had that structure, writing the book was easier. But it took a while for me to really, you know, understand or get to that structure. And I think it was just years and years and years of reading other books and trying to figure out what might work. So the second obstacle that we've talked about is the knowledge gap. You know, when there's something we just don't know and we need to learn about. And I think that's a fairly easy one to solve. And we're already at the third obstacle, which is what I call functional obstacles. And I write a lot about this on my blog. It's one of my favorite topics, and it's one of my favorite things to help writers with. A functional obstacle is when a writer gets tripped up by problems like finding time to write, getting interrupted, and other practical issues. So, you know, it's not so much that you have a knowledge gap, and it's not so much that you're focused on the end game. It's that you've got practical issues that get in the way of your writing. You know, today was a great example. I have a teenage son who's going to college and living at home, which means he is home all the time between classes, and he wants to hang out and listen to rock music. And I kept saying, you know, I'm giving a talk today. I want to get ready. Oh, but can't we just listen to one song? So that's a functional obstacle. You know, he is functionally in the middle of my workplace, making it difficult for me to work. So let me talk about, you know, what this looks like, or what I've seen it look like in my life and in the lives of my clients. It looks like not scheduling time to write. Instead, you wait for inspiration. You put, you know, work on my book on your to-do list, and you're pretty sure, you know, you're going to get to it. Like you get to eating and cleaning up the house and doing the laundry. You think, you know, okay, it's on my to-do list, I'm going to do it. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. But life happens and sometimes happens to get in the way. So when you're busy or you don't feel inspired, you don't actually do the things on your to-do list. You don't sit down to write or to work on your book. And so you might put work on my book, you know, for on your to-do list for days and days and days without ever sitting down to write. It also looks like giving up that scheduled writing time to work on other projects, see friends, or take care of other business. So you schedule a writing day or you schedule a regular writing time. But when things get busy, when you have clients show up and need you, or when a family member or a friend needs you, it's really tempting to give away that time to other work that needs to be done, or people you need to see, or even doctor's appointments or errands, you know, things that you just have to get done. And because you're so busy the rest of the time, you know, your writing time looks like big old empty time. Another way it looks like is just getting distracted during writing time by external things. For me today, it was my kids. But sometimes it's the dogs. I see my friends are getting distracted by their cats who like to sit on top of their laptop. The partner who stops in your office and says, hey, did you know, blah, blah, blah. The texts that come in on your phone, you know, maybe you keep your phone by you because you have an aging parent or you have children or you have a friend who's ill and you want to be there for the emergencies, but then you get all the silly texts and push notifications too. You get interrupted by social media. So you set aside time to write and you start working on it, but then your phone buzzes with a text, or the dogs start barking, or they have an accident, or their partner has something that needs to be taken care of immediately, and suddenly, you know, your writing day is gone, or your writing day is interrupted, or at least your focus is interrupted. Another way this looks like is allowing writing time to get eaten up by something else, social media, phone calls, chores. And, you know, it's not like we try to have this happen. I think it's just like maybe we get to kind of a sticky place in the writing and we think, well, you know, maybe I'll just see what's going on Facebook or Twitter. And then an hour goes by and you're like, oops, I just lost an hour of my writing. Or we think, you know, I'm just going to go put the dishes in the dishwasher, and then we see we have a stack of mail to go through and maybe want to fill the dog's water bowls or whatever, and suddenly, oops. Another way this looks is we start writing, but we can't focus. Our mind is moving in 100 different directions, and we have lots of ideas for all sorts of new projects, and so it's hard to kind of just stick with the task that we're working on because we think, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I'm wondering about this, maybe I should check out this, I wonder if that's for sale. You know, all these different things are floating around and it's hard to focus. So I could go on and on because functional obstacles are some of the most common and the most annoying, I think. They're very difficult. And I talk about this a lot in my blog. So you have heard some of these fixes before, but I want you to kind of play along with me and think about this. So as I talk through this, I want you to kind of think about your own life. You've already kind of got the obstacle, and maybe you found out that it was, in fact, an endgame obstacle. Maybe you found out it was a knowledge block, or maybe it's one of these functional obstacles. And so these are some tools for overcoming the functional obstacles, and they can also work with the others too, but they're best with functional obstacles. And the first thing is just to take a look at your past and your past writing. So as I'm talking, I want you to think about this. Think about a time when you were super successful as a writer, where you were very productive. Think about what were you doing when you were the most productive, and then list everything you can think of. What was going on in your life? What made it possible for you to write? Were you writing at a specific time of day? Did you write in a special place? Were you brainstorming before you started writing? Did you have a deadline? Did you have regular feedback? Once you have a list, you can then kind of take that information about what you did during your most productive writing times and try to apply it to now. And it might be, you know, it might be something like, okay, my most productive writing time was when I was on sabbatical and I was by myself alone in the woods and I had all day, every day to write, and that's all I was going to do for 3 weeks, and so I got a ton done. And, you know, well, I can't do that again because I've got all this stuff going on. But you can create something like a weekly sabbatical for a day where you go off and write, or a monthly sabbatical where you take a weekend off to write. So the first thing to do is really take a look at your past, look at what happened during your most productive writing times, and pay attention to everything from the big things to the little things, and see what you can do to recreate some of that. So that's the first tool. The second tool is to really think about your strengths. So think about what you're especially good at. So, and this can be something you do a little bit on the call. I'm moving fairly fast, so it's hard. But you can just start writing some things down if you have a place to take notes. So what are you good at? What are your writing strengths? I know that some writers that I work with are really good at seeing the big picture. Some are good at noticing details and describing those. Some are good at explaining hard concepts in a way that everybody can understand. Some are great at creating unique metaphors. Some writers are good at creating character. Beyond that, some of you are good first drafters. Others of you are better revisers. You each have things that you're really good at, and you each have probably 5 to 10 things that you're really good at that you can say, "Wow, I'm good at that." And then the other thing I want you to think about is not just what you're good at with writing, but think about other strengths that help you navigate life. And make another list. So maybe you could say, well, I'm really good at networking, or I'm really good at strategizing. I'm really good at learning things quickly. I know some people are really good in crisis situations, or some are really good at organizing. You can take like big bunches of junk and figure out how it all fits together, and you can do the same thing with ideas as you do with, junk in a junk drawer. So take a list then of all the strengths that help you navigate life. And there are some tests out there to help you, and I can send that in my note after the call is over. But get a list of your strengths together. And now you have two lists. You've got a list of the things you're good at with writing, and you've got a list of the things that you're good at with life. And the goal now is to think about how do you use these strengths to overcome your obstacles. So here's an example. I had a client who was a great list maker, but he always had trouble getting to his writing because he was making to-do lists about his whole life when he was supposed to be working on his novel. So he would make a to-do list and then think about, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And so he'd get so involved in the to-do list making that he'd never get to actually doing the writing. And so we decided that he would try to make a list of things he had to do on his novel. So rather than making a list of like big things he had to do, work on novel, fix bike, make supper, it was more like, I have to write the scene. I have to write a fight scene. I have to write a love scene. I have to write an exchange between the two main characters about their son. I have to describe the front door. And this was a great exercise because he was already great at making to-do lists. So this just helped him make that transition from making to-do lists to actually writing by working with something he was really good at. He was really good at making to-do lists. So if you don't have any idea how to do the application part, so you know what your goal, your achievements are, you know what you're good at, but you're not sure how they're going to help you with your writing, it's helpful to think about how would you talk to a friend with a similar type of challenge and strength. If you were talking to a friend instead of yourself, what advice would you give that person? Because sometimes it's easier to tell a friend than to tell ourselves what we need to do. So what would you tell them? How would you tell them to overcome the obstacle using this particular set of strengths? And another way to attack what I call functional obstacles is to take a look at your weaknesses and your deficits and think about the strengths that are hiding inside them. Now, I know this sounds kind of weird, like why would I look at my weaknesses to figure out how I can overcome an obstacle? This idea comes from community-based asset mapping. And in that work, asset mappers ask groups to list their assets. And when groups get to the end of their assets, or when they get stuck on their deficits, they ask them to look for the assets that are hiding inside the deficits and think about how they can use those assets to help them solve their problems. So here's an example. I work with a lot of writers who suffer from ADD. I think I think we in our society, first of all, it's a common problem, but secondly, we're experiencing kind of a functional ADD because of all the time we spend online and the way we read today. So I work with a ton of people who have ADD and who get so distracted by new ideas and other tasks that they have trouble writing for an extended length of time. So they would look at that as a weakness. You know, they would say, well, look, here is my big weakness, is that I'm so distracted by so many things that I cannot get a book finished, or I cannot even get a chapter finished. So I would say, well, what's the strengths of your attention deficit disorder? And one of the strengths for someone with ADD is that they usually have lots of good ideas, lots of fresh, interesting, fun ideas, and they're able to focus really well for brief spurts. So often I'll invite a writer who's suffering with this or dealing with ADD to try a few things. Maybe use their ability to come up with wild new ideas, to come up with ideas of how to overcome the obstacle. Or instead of trying to write for 6 hours straight, write in 20-minute spurts, and between them give themselves time to be distracted. If they like to be distracted, then create an experience where they can work for 20 minutes and then be distracted for 10 minutes, and then work for another 20 and be distracted for another 10. So those are some tools for how to overcome functional obstacles, and there are a lot more of those on the blog. So I want to talk, as we kind of come to a close, about how to look at your own obstacles. So I've talked about three obstacles that writers face, and you're going to have your own obstacles that may not fit neatly into my three categories. Or if they do fall into my categories, you know, they might be difficult to figure out how to solve, or maybe they bridge two categories. They're kind of a functional obstacle and an end game obstacle. And so the key to really overcoming your particular obstacle is studying your own obstacle and studying your life and figuring out how to overcome it on your own. And so when I work with clients, I always ask them to put on their scientist hat and examine the data. And we talked about this in the Overcoming Writer's Block class as well, because I think this is so helpful. And I just did it for myself a couple of weeks ago. I was feeling like really not energized by work. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to track my days and keep a journal and see what worked and what didn't. So what I'd like you to do is, you know, take some time over the next few weeks to chart your life. I think it's easiest at the end of each day, you know, to kind of jot down what you're doing throughout the day, and then at the end of each day, write about what you did that day. And if, excuse me, if you experienced a writing obstacle, then write about it. If you expected to encounter an obstacle but instead did well with writing, write about that too. So maybe I had a day last week where I had this big writing project. I was really worried about it. It seemed like too much to finish in a day, and it ended up going very quickly. And so it was interesting to examine what made that work for me when usually it didn't, when I was so worried about it. So ask yourself some questions like, so what happened? What happened when I encountered this obstacle, but also what happened when I had this very productive moment? And write a summary of what happened during that time. And, you know, don't just summarize it. Write some details about what was going on. And as I always tell the kids I teach, you know, use sensory details so we get a sense of what's going on. What was the sound like? What were you smelling? What were some other things like in your surroundings? What was going on with the writing? What were you working on that day? Where was your head? What was going on with you? Did you have other stuff going on in your life that you were focused on or that you didn't have to focus on that day? And how did you handle the obstacle or the productivity? And did the solution work? So at the end of 2 weeks, you should have some pretty good, you should have a pretty good record of what you've done. And then just look at it for commonalities. You know, what did you do when you were most productive? What did you do when you had the most obstacles? What solutions did you try? What worked? What didn't? What strengths do you see? What weaknesses do you see? And how would you solve this? And once you've done this for a couple of weeks, it's kind of fun, you know, to get a group of folks together and talk about it and kind of think about how you can solve each other's problems. So we've talked about three obstacles, end game obsession, which is thinking about the end when we should be working on the process. So thinking about product when we're really on process. The second is the knowledge gap when we get stuck on how to do something. And the third is the functional obstacle when we're trying to just, you know, when something interrupts our time or we don't get to our writing every day. And I do have a special offer for you again. Between now and April 15th, I'm offering once again that coaching special for overcoming obstacles. For just $75, you get 45 minutes of one-on-one coaching to just think about your obstacle. And as soon as the recording is posted, I'll send you an email with the specific details and how to sign up. I do want to get to any obstacles that you have, so we have a little practice on the phone so we can talk, see what it looks like. So I'm going to click to begin the question and answer.